The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. The North Korean nuclear crisis has been defying resolution for years. However, the recent midterm elections in the U.S. and changes on the Korean Peninsula may finally break the impasse. What steps will it take to make progress at the renewed six-party talks? And what will a solution mean for the future of North Korea and the U.S. role in Northeast Asia? On November 21st, the Korea Society convened a panel of experts to address these questions. In part 3 of our 5-part series, Gerald Curtis, Burgess Professor of International Affairs at Columbia University and a top U.S. scholar on Japanese politics, explained how the issues look from Tokyo's perspective.
I find I've been looking forward to all of this, but I'm particularly looking forward to hearing Jerry Curtis because, Jerry, I find in my work here, I very seldom get anybody who really talks substantively about Japan. And if there's anybody in the world who can do that, it's you. So feel free to talk about the differences between Koizumi and Abe, why you think the Japanese are so hung up on the abductees issue, why their cage was so rattled by the Taepodong firing, and really weave any of those strands into your remarks. We're really delighted to have you here.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here, and it's an honor to be with these distinguished panelists, friends of mine, and I've already learned a lot by listening to the two men on my right. Let me give you my take on the Japanese view of North Korea and on what to do about North Korea's nuclear weapons. There are three sort of basic features of Japanese thinking about North Korea. This is sort of public in general. One is that North Korea represents the most serious security threat to Japan since the end of the Second World War. That is, you know, during the Cold War, Americans had a hard time convincing Japan that the Soviets really were a threat, because it was quite clear if there was going to be a Soviet attack on Japan, it could only come in the context of a Third World War between the Soviet Union and the United States. There was confidence in the American alliance. North Korea represents something very new and very scary for Japan. The Taepodong missile test of 1998 went over Japanese sky. That the test this past July, the short and intermediate range missiles that can reach Japan worked. So there's a perception of that North Korea represents a real threat. And if you read the Japanese press and listen to some of the people in this government talk about North Korea's possession of nuclear weapons, you would think that they think that there's a reasonable chance that North Korea would drop a bomb on Japan. Now, I don't think there's a reasonable chance of that occurring at all, but I'm trying to give you, first of all, my sense of where the Japanese are coming from. Second, key characteristic of Japanese thinking about North Korea is spelled, well, it's pronounced abductee. It's the abductee issue. This issue is growing larger and larger by the day now that Mr. Abe is prime minister, because he pushes this issue in a way that Prime Minister Koizumi did not. In the last few weeks, the government has officially increased the number of people who are officially declared to have been abducted by North Korea. The number's now up to 17. It will continue to go up because there probably were more people abducted. This is a source of, is a spur to heighten Japanese nationalism, and it toughens Japanese public opinion about how to deal with North Korea. And the third characteristic about Japanese thinking about North Korea is that it's the one place in the world where you can find a lot of support for the Bush administration, especially the more right-wing elements in the Bush administration's views on how to deal with North Korea, which is that you punish it, you put sanctions on it, you don't talk to it, you don't negotiate with North Korea until they come around. And for Japan, that means coming around on the abductee issue as much as it does on the nuclear issue. And now that Abe Shinzo is prime minister, these features that I've just described to you are more intense than they were under Koizumi. There is a big difference between Koizumi and Abe in their attitudes towards North Korea, I believe. So let me say a little bit about Koizumi and his approach, and then, because it sets up a nice contrast, I think, with the current situation. And my final point is the implications for U.S. policy in dealing with North Korea and in dealing with Japan. That's where I want to end up, and I'll do it fairly briefly. Now, I had the opportunity to have a conversation with Prime Minister Koizumi a few months before he left office. It was just two of us. And we were talking about 5 years he had been in office. And I said, you know, what is it you wanted to accomplish in these 5 years that you didn't accomplish? It's the best question I asked him all night. And he didn't hesitate a second. And he said, I wanted to normalize relations with North Korea. And it frustrates me that I couldn't do it. And he said, and the reason is the nuclear issue. He said, if we could have gotten the North Koreans to come to an agreement on the nuclear issue, I would have dealt with the abductee issue in a way that would not have allowed it to interfere with normalization of relations. When Mr. Abe became prime minister, one of the first things he did was to invite in the families of those who had been abducted, Mr. and Mrs. Yokota and others. Prime Minister Koizumi never invited them to the Prime Minister's office. He did his best, I think, to try to get the abductees that he knew to be alive out of North Korea, and he made a second visit to Pyongyang solely for that purpose, was to get the children of those who had already been gotten out, to get those children out. So I think his view was, you do what you can to deal with this humanitarian tragedy, and then you think about the national interests and you try to normalize relations on the basis of a denuclearized North Korea. He believed that, and he apparently told George Bush that the U.S. needed to engage in bilateral relations with negotiations with North Korea, because that's the only way you can deal with North Korea. And he opposed unilateral sanctions, or at least he was not enthusiastic about unilateral sanctions. When they finally were, you know, there was a resolution adopted, but it didn't have any teeth. And it was mainly because of the pressure of his chief cabinet secretary, who is now the prime minister of Japan, Mr. Abe. So Koizumi left office frustrated and disappointed that the North Korean issue had not been moved, that hadn't been moved towards a resolution. And he's been replaced by Mr. Abe. Now, one of the key reasons why Mr. Abe is Prime Minister of Japan is because of North Korea. When Koizumi made his first visit to Pyongyang, Abe was with him. Abe was the one who said after the morning session with Kim Jong-il, look, if he doesn't fess up on the abductee issues, we should just go home. And that, of course, got leaked to the Japanese press, and they came back, and Abe was the hero on this issue of supporting the those who had been abducted and their families. He was committed to unilateral sanctions against North Korea long before the North Korean nuclear test. He's been arguing for unilateral economic sanctions against North Korea for the last several years because of the abductee issue. And let's face it, the North Koreans have lied about what happened to the abductees, and when the lies have been exposed, they figured out some new lie that was then exposed, and they have not come clean on the abductee issue, giving plenty of room for those in Japan who want to play up this issue to rally Japanese nationalism, to support a hard line against North Korea, whatever. So Abe is very, I think, is more committed to a hard line position on North Korea, and shows not much interest, and surely doesn't say very much at all about the need for negotiations with North Korea. The North Korean nuclear test has now spurred a debate in Japan about whether Japan should itself possess nuclear weapons. I don't think it's going to end up with a decision that Japan should possess nuclear weapons, but the debate is real. Prime Minister Abe says that the current policy is not going to change, but he has not really tried to stop key people in his administration, the foreign minister and the head of the Policy Affairs Research Council, which is the key policymaking body in the ruling party, that these two men, from talking about the need to have a debate on nuclear weapons. And it's raised lots of questions in Japan about the reliability of the American extended nuclear deterrent. And Condoleezza Rice made a trip to Tokyo precisely for the purpose of reassuring the Japanese that the deterrent is credible. But this issue is now out in the open and is being debated in Japan. My view, Japan is not and will not be a major player on the North Korean issue. This issue, in the end, Japanese will basically be where the U.S. is on the North Korean issue. It doesn't have much leverage of its own. It's put itself in a corner in terms of taking a very hardline policy, and it's impossible for me to see this administration offering normalization, reparations, the other things that would come in the process of normalization, as a way to entice North Korea back to the table. So I don't see Japan as being a major player, but it's very much aligned with a very hardline position in the U.S. Now, this complicates U.S. policy, because it's very important that if our cautious optimist on my extreme right here is right, and I hope he is, if the cautious optimism is right and some sense comes to American policy vis-a-vis North Korea, it's very important that we don't surprise the Japanese. If we surprise the Japanese and leave Abe embarrassed and exposed, that will heighten this debate about Japan going nuclear, about the unreliability of the U.S. alliance, about the need for Japan to do more on its own. So it worries me that this administration does not have, whether this administration, I'll put it in more neutral terms, concerns me whether this administration has the ability to keep all these balls in the air, has the sense to take a more sensible position to policy towards North Korea, and has the sophistication to deal with the Japanese in a way that does not alarm the Japanese, isolate Abe, and create political problems for him, but brings him along. That's not easy to accomplish. But that's now another new wrinkle on this on U.S. Asian policy, U.S. policy towards North Korea. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. The Japanese never like to be surprised. They still are reverberating about the Nixon shoku, the opening to China. And I have to tell a story. I served 10 years in Japan and used to speak pretty good Japanese, and was out on a semi-sober Sobetz Kai one night with a Japanese cabinet minister during the Vietnam War. And he asked me if I thought that President Johnson would be reelected. And I said, I thought that there was a chance that Johnson might not even run for president. And I think I forgot that I said that. But Hugh Alexis Johnson was the ambassador to Tokyo at that point. And subsequently, LBJ pulled out and said, I'm not going to run for president. And I got a call from Ambassador Johnson in the middle of the night saying, please come over immediately. And so I went over. And he said, I've just had an irate call from Prime Minister Sato saying that you Americans knew in advance that Johnson was going to resign, and you didn't tell us. And why not? And he said apparently the basis of that was something that you whispered in a cabinet minister's ear on a New Year's Eve party. I confess that I had done it. Had no idea that my friend had taken it so seriously or had taken it to Sato. But it is an example that the Japanese really do not like to be surprised. Anyway, thank you, Jerry. That was most interesting.
The opinions expressed in this forum do not necessarily reflect those of the Korea Society.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.